Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 78 of the Weekly Cooldown and it is February 7th. We're going to do things a little bit different this week and this month, and for this episode, but I'll explain a little bit more about that in a bit. First, we've still got some pretty big headlines to go over this week, so let's get started with the headline recap. The Final Fantasy XIV live letter was today. We're recording today, February 6th. As usual, producer Naoki Yoshida sat alongside the usual guest, Toshio Muruuchi, to discuss the latest content coming to Final Fantasy XIV in Patch 5.2, Echoes of a Fallen Star. In addition to new content with the eight-player raid content known as Eden, players will also be tackling a new trial known as Cinder Drift, which features one of the super bosses from Final Fantasy VII, Ruby Weapon. In addition, new Beast Tribe quests are on the way, additions to the Gold Saucer, and apparently umbrellas, which is something someone asked for. The patch drops on February 18th. Fans can view the brand new trailer in anticipation for the new patch now on the special webpage on the Final Fantasy XIV website. The Final Fantasy VII Remake exclusivity window has been pushed back to match up with the delay of the game coming to PS4. Previously, the remake was scheduled to come on March 3rd, meaning that any other versions of the game, either for PC or Xbox One, would launch a year later. The delay, which has been pushed back the game's release until April 10th, 2020, now means that the release on PC or Xbox is also pushed back until April 10th, 2021. Blizzard is offering refunds for players who purchased Warcraft 3 Reforged. Players who were once excited in 2018 when the remaster was announced are not impressed with the game. According to players, many of the major overhauls for the game, including remodels, new animations, and 4K resolutions, simply were not delivered. Gameplay that we saw in 2018 simply does not seem to match with what was delivered in 2020. Since players have been vocal about their frustrations, Blizzard has decided to issue refunds. A support message on Blizzard's website says, quote, "We want to give players the options of a refund if they feel that Warcraft 3 Reforged does not provide the experience they wanted." Last week and this week, we received two different reports in regard to Silent Hill. First, a report from Konami that the company is looking at a continuation of the Silent Hill series, and now a new report that the director of the first Silent Hill film adaptation, Christoph Gans, is planning to do another. Additionally, Gans has said he is also working to adapt the Fatal Frame series, another decently popular and well-known horror title. It is still too early to tell quite what direction these films will take, whether it'll be a sequel to the last of Silent Hill film adaptation, but we do know that they are at least in the pre-production stages, according to Gans. And finally, Platinum Games seems to be making moves this week. Earlier this week, Platinum Games opened up a Platinum 4 teaser website. Later, they revealed that they were releasing a Kickstarter campaign in order to bring the Wonderful 101 to the Nintendo Switch and other systems. Wonderful 101 was a cult classic game that released only for the Wii U in 2013. Now, after only a few hours of being on the Kickstarter, the crowdfunding campaign has reached nearly $1.5 million and continues to climb as the goal ends on March 6, 2020. Despite having a crowdfunding campaign, Platinum and developers who are working on the Wonderful 101 are confident that the game will ship in April of this year. To tie up the Platinum 4 teaser website, there are still three other announcements that have yet to fill up the site, meaning that Platinum is not yet done with the Platinum 4 teaser website. And those are just some of the big headlines this week. If you've got some comments you want to make, or if I missed one you really want to chat about, tweet at me at CommyJaceGaming on Twitter or at WKCooldown on Twitter. Or join us on Discord and let's talk more about it. Let me know all about it. What I miss. I always miss something because there's a lot of big headlines, but then there's a lot of small ones that I don't think are big. So I mean, might be different. Might be di I think differently than you do. That's what we call an opinion. And you know what they say about opinions? They're like buttholes. You can say assholes on this. I didn't want to say it, but now I said it. Anyway, that's how that goes. Everyone has an opinion and everyone has an asshole. Okay, now that that's out of the way, now that I've imparted that information onto you, I have a guest here. For February, I decided, and I decided this actually last year, for the weekly cooldown, that I wanted to very specifically focus on black voices for, of course, Black History Month, being in February. So I am focusing on bringing the black experience to the weekly cooldown and really highlighting those experiences here on the show. And also, if there's any news that seems to kind of fit into that, I want to highlight those as well with my guest. So, for my first guest, who was very, very, kind as to fill in a slot for me because my original guest had to drop out, please say hello and welcome for the first time ever, Kaiju Cat.
Thank you very much, Jace. Hello, everyone.
Hey,
It's nice
thank
to meet you
you.
all.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So this was kind of like inevitable though. This was gonna happen at one point.
Well, I'm very glad you decided to have me. Though I do kind of wish I had more stuff out there when I came on, but you know what? What better way to get started?
Yeah, right. I mean, I didn't have a, let me tell you something. When I started this podcast, I didn't have a goddamn thing. Now I have this podcast. I stream sometimes. That's truly all I have, but you know what? It's there and I'm doing it and you can do it too.
Thanks.
Now, what are you working on, if we can talk about it?
Yes, so I'm very much an aspiring content creator. I don't have anything yet as I'm really trying to find my niche. I'd really love to stream, but my net's not really good for it.
But that's great. I mean, we always want to kind of give something back to the world, and I think that content creating is a way for everyone to kind of give a little bit of themselves to the internet, the world, whatever they kind of see it as.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of funny because for the longest time I was really concerned about like leaving an impact on the world, on really changing people's lives. But I think at this point I just want to be able to say, hey, I put something out there. I made this. Look at it.
Right, exactly. I think that's all most of us want is to just a little bit of recognition. Maybe not a whole lot, but like enough to make us feel like, okay, I helped somebody today.
But I think one of the most major projects I'd like to get started with is just like something small, a couple of videos. I'm really into Dungeons and Dragons lately. I've actually running a campaign with my fiance and my friends, and so one of the videos is I'd like to like share a system for creating quests specifically for D&D, kind of like maybe the 5 R's of D&D quests or something. And for the others, I'd just like to share my experience and perspectives as someone who's brand spanking new to D&D. That and, I don't
Right.
really see a lot of black women with D&D content, or at least our faces in like videos or anything. And I just kind of wanted to add to that pool, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A part of the reason why I started this podcast was because there's definitely not enough black gay gamers doing a video game news opinion podcast. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do that. Let's see anyone try and stop me because they can't. I'm behind a screen. So that's great. I like that a lot. I'm happy that people are kind of getting to a point where they're saying like, you know what? I don't see enough of that, so I'm gonna start it. Very good, very good, very good. So, I was kind of gonna leave this question out, but I feel like it's not this show if I don't ask it. So, please tell me, what have you been playing this week?
So, I finally completed the main storyline for Monster Hunter World. Great game. Like, Monster Hunter World for me is one of those games that's really kind of encouraging me not to be as casual Like, there's nothing wrong with being casual, but I've always wanted to challenge myself, really take on difficult content, and Monster Hunter World is a great sort of segue into that. But I don't want to get too burned out. So, yeah, I've taken a break from it at the moment.
Monster Hunter World is such a hard game for me to. First of all, I don't understand the controls very well for some reason. Like, I've played a ton of like difficult video games before, and for some reason, Monster Hunter World in particular makes my brain malfunction, and I just can't figure out which weapon I'm supposed to be using, which weapon feels right to me, how to fight the monsters, 'cause usually it's just like stick it with a pointy end, but now it's like, no, climb on the back and then stick it with the pointy end. And I'm like, which is which for this one? And I get very, very overwhelmed. But I do enjoy that there's this really large community for Monster Hunter World. That seems really nice.
Oh yeah, it's great. And I guess that's the thing about Monster Hunter, because I think maybe a trick might be to try it with a controller. Like, do you play with a keyboard or a controller?
I find that playing with controller is way harder.
Ah, yeah. And I guess it's funny
That's
because,
very strange.
yeah, for me it's the opposite. Like, I tried it with a keyboard and mouse first, but I'm like, too weird. And then, like, because I thought of it like sort of like a Dark Souls game to use an overused comparison, but usually with those types of games, controllers just feel more natural to me. But you know, that's just me.
Right. Well, I don't know. Maybe someday I'll give it a try again.
I'll be glad to help you out if you'd like.
Yeah, we have a lot of friends in common who are really big into Monster Hunter, so I think we can all just get together one day and just kind of teach me how to do it. Because I'm not great at it. But
I mean
that's a
it,
good one. It's a good game.
and I guess I kind of feel you on the challenging part, because I've actually picked up Darkest Dungeon again. I beat the first act and slay the, or I beat the final act and slay the spire of one of the characters. So I'm like, you know what? I'm doing pretty good. I'm gonna try Darkest Dungeon again. Yeah,
Ooh.
it had something to say
No.
about that.
Yeah, right. Darkest Dungeon's one of those games that are like that's really heavy on the experience of making you want to cry.
Like, and that's the thing. I'm on the easiest difficulty. I've put in 300 hours on this game and I still haven't beaten it.
It's mind-blowing how what makes a video game fun for some people is a game being that difficult.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know, it's not for me for sure, but
No, I get you, but at this point, I just want to be able to say, hey, I beat it, but it was the easiest difficulty. No, I still beat it. It counts.
right. Yes, no. In this case, the easiest difficulty is normal. Normal is like hard, and hard is like go fuck yourself.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, that's cool though. That's awesome. I enjoy those games very much. At least watching most of them, but not playing them. So on that note, how long do you think you've been playing video games?
Oh, good Lord. I would probably say since it's kind of weird. I've definitely been playing and interacting with video games since I was probably 5. I don't know if my mom had bought it for herself or for my older sister, but we actually had an original Nintendo Entertainment System. And I usually just played like Duck Hunt and Mario and Tetris, like none of the really, what's the word for it? I would say more engaging games, but at the same time, I never beat Super Mario Brothers, so. And
This sounds very similar to my existence with video games starting out, because it was definitely getting together with my brother and my mom and playing the original NES, and someone would load up a cartridge and we'd play for a while, lose a whole lot, not get anywhere, and then just kind of be like, okay, well, that was fun.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of funny. I actually have a story about sort of like being black and how it relates to video games, and I guess a funny anecdote with my mother and Duck Hunt. So Duck Hunt was actually one of the games I used to play a lot, and we actually had the Zapper controller for it. And so I would cheat, obviously, put the gun on the screen to get the ducks. Yeah, one day my mom saw me doing that, and she was like, no, no, let me teach you how to shoot properly. And so I asked her, like, you know, how'd you learn how to shoot? And to preface this, I live in North Carolina. My entire family is from North Carolina. And my mom lived out in the country in the 60s. And yeah, my grandfather was actually a veteran. And so given the type of people that would drive around the neighborhood, he taught her how to shoot for self-defense. And it's like, it's funny how something like that sort of like gets passed down the line. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right. Absolutely. In a similar vein, we also had the Duck Hunt video game. We also had the Zapper. I had no idea how to use it. I was pointing it at the screen and, you know, pulling the trigger, and that was enough, you know, for me to be happy. However, my mom always thought guns dangerous, guns bad. And a big reason why she thought that is because we grew up in the Bronx in New York City many, 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 many years. My mom has seen all kinds of violence, but not only because of the violence that can go on in the city, but also she was a cop for about, I want to say 4 years, maybe less, but 3 to 4 years. And she's held every kind of weapon imaginable. And to this day, as a former cop, she says, and as someone who has lived in New York City all her life, knowing what goes on, she has always said guns are dangerous. That being said, she's never been without teaching all of her kids, me, my brother, and my sister, how to defend themselves against people in general, how to watch people, how to be around other people, and how to recognize kind of social cues, body language, all these kinds of things. So it's interesting because as video games evolve, you kind of get that feeling from certain other video games. So like as we go along, let's come into like the early to mid to 2000 area, so like 2000 to like 2005 going into 2006, you start getting games that are a little more complex that teach you, you know, if someone's doing this thing, they're probably the game that comes to mind is like True Crime, Streets of LA, or even the New York City True Crime, where you are conditioned and almost taught how to recognize someone who might be doing a crime before the game actually tells you where the crime is happening. So you can walk by someone and notice a drug deal or something like that, and you're like, oh, that's a drug deal, and then you'll start going to break it up or whatever. The same goes for like L.A. Noire. You get the, you know, the doubt button, the famous doubt button. But that's a lot of things that my mother taught me kind of early on, like how to recognize when someone's lying on their face. So it's like, I don't want to call it necessarily the black experience, but like, it's weird how the life experience somehow translates into video games, or vice versa.
Yeah.
The Duck Hunt shooter somehow translates back into like your life experience.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy, because I guess that's something I was always considering, I guess, as I probably should have warned you, I got ADD, so it's hard for me to get my thoughts together. But yes, like,
that's fair.
I would actually like to see a video game, like, sort of about a more nuanced version of the Black experience. Like, I guess the example I had brought up in my point was, like, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. Like, I know absolutely nothing about it, so I will defer to your expertise. Like, is it a game that has mostly black characters in it?
It is almost entirely consisting of either black or POC characters. The white characters are there. They take part in what's going on, but it's really about CJ, his family, and the gang that he is involved in.
And I guess how would you say it depicts the black experience? Because I know absolutely nothing about it.
I would say that it glorifies the part of the quote unquote black experience that other people like to glorify normally. So, the sagging pants, the gang violence, jewelry, guns, and drugs, and women, and all that stuff. It kind of glorifies and makes light of, in some cases, the idea of the black experience solely on the violence part. And a lot of that has to do with the existence in the 90s, especially when the game takes place, of those gangs. So Bloods and Crips, especially in the 90s. So it does take a lot of cues from that and set, and of course sets it in the kind of California state where a lot of those gangs were popping up. I don't think it was the Latin Kings necessarily, but you know, there's a version of the Latin Kings and there's a version of the other Hispanic groups, Mexican gangs, and so on and so forth. So it really takes and continues to really kind of put on a pedestal the black experience as gang members, not as like anything other than gang members. Even in later parts of the game where you kind of leave the gang behind for a while and there's some other mitigating factors going on, it's still kind of about like the only thing I know what how to do is crime. And it sucks a little bit.
And yeah, I guess that's the thing. Like, I would love to see a game like with mostly black characters, and it's kind of difficult because I think there's a delicate balance on depicting the lives of black people. Like, I think there's no getting around the fact that we're still very much different disenfranchised, or like we still have problems with violence and drugs and basically everything wrong with our communities, but I do think that developers need to realize that's not all there is to us. Like, I mean, I've grown up in the suburbs pretty much 100% of my life, and but I mean, I do have family that's still very disenfranchised that lives in low-income areas, but I also have family that's pretty well off. It's basically just like, unfortunately, the thing with developers and writers, creators in general, think that there's really only one way to depict a black person. And even if they do manage to sort of like have some variation, it's very clear sort of what they favor in terms of lifestyle and everything. It's like you could have a writer that manages to depict black people that are well off and are low income and have to and deal with violence, and it's very clear that they'll like glorify the people from those low income areas that deal with violence and like sort of pass off the black people who are well off and behave differently as sort of traitors or something.
It's also a little unfortunate that we don't seem to have, at least in my mind, none that I can really remember, any characters that aren't in a violent video game that are black. So, I mean, as aside from, let's say, making your own black character in like a Stardew Valley or something like that, most of the black characters that we have, or characters of color, that we think are, you know, really cool or something like that, are usually portrayed violently or with a gun. So the biggest example I can think of without being in directly within a kind of shoot 'em up video game, a shooter or anything like that, is Barrett from Final Fantasy VII.
Oh gosh, yeah.
He is by all means an amazing character. In the remake, he seems like a really cool representation of a black character, and that's cool. However, his hand is gun.
Yeah.
he comes with it. It's just built onto his hand. And that's kind of just how it is. It's something we accept, and it's something we're just kind of like okay with.
Yeah, and yeah, I guess now that you mention it, like it's really hard for me to imagine or like imagine all the black characters I know that aren't part of a shooter. Like I think of, I'm sorry, what was his name? Was it Jacob from Mass Effect?
Jacob, I think so.
Yeah, Jacob from Mass Effect, and
Let's.
who also got kind of screwed over in my opinion with writing, but and then I think of Coltrane from Gears of War, and like one of my favorite characters in Borderlands, which we can talk about later, is Aurelia. And oh my gosh, I loved her when I first saw her. Like, yes, she's a bit morally ambiguous. Not a bit. She's very morally ambiguous, but to me, she was just such a breath of fresh air because she was a black woman that just, wasn't just a sassy black woman. She was a character. She had faults. She had wants. She was funny. She, had a drive. She had goals. And like her entire power and ability set wasn't really centered on her blackness. It was just something pretty cool and different. And, but at the same time, she's a part of a shooter. So.
Right. Yes. It's really quite strange, and it feels like, admittedly, it feels like complaining, right? Because on one hand, we recognize that there is a lack of representation. On the other hand, we're also saying, by the way, give us representation that isn't violent, please.
I don't think that's really necessarily a difficult thing to ask. I think too many people fall into the caveat of like, things have to be one way or another. Like, I don't think it's wrong to ask for representation and at the same time ask for that representation to not be violent. I think it's a very fair question. It's a very fair demand to ask, creators and writers to be like, hey, please consider that we're not like not all one thing. Like, just don't give us the token image or the token black character with a gun,
Absolutely. We asked on Twitter what were some of the video games you could think of with some pretty cool main characters who were also black. Cat Poster, or my good friend Patrick over here in Buffalo, cited Gears of War as having some pretty good representation. I think in particular he means Cole. I believe his name is Coltrane or something in Gears of War. Augustus Cole. The reason I kind of slightly disagree with and push back on the Gears of War thing is, first, he was kind of, at least in my opinion, and I feel really bad saying it, but if he felt kind of typical, I guess.
No, I get what you're saying, because, yeah, because my fiance was really into Gears of War for a while, and one of his favorite characters was Cole. And at first, I really didn't like him because he just seemed so stereotypical, like big black man in a football, really lively and energetic. And I guess he actually told me about like some development he got in the novels, because he was that into Gears of War that he read the novels. And like they show a little bit more nuance to Cole's character, where he still writes letters to his dead mother, basically sort of like as a diary as to how he feels about what's going on. But I guess at the time, I didn't think much of it, because to me, it was sort of like, I guess, how do I put this? It seemed like sort of a cheap way to give him some nuance. But at the same time, I could see the validity in it, because I guess Gears of War is one of those series where they don't really get into the emotional aspects of it, but it was nice. It was nice to see at least, you know, some attempt to round him out, even if it wasn't on screen, which would have been better, in my opinion.
I will also say that for as much as I kind of disliked the, or felt kind of weird about the kind of overt stereotypes that Cole seems to present, I also recognize that there is something kind of satisfying, and it feels kind of weird to say, but there's something satisfying about being like unapologetically black the way Cole is.
Gosh, yes.
He brings to the table such energy and such passion about literally everything he does. When you first meet him, he's in Gears of War 1, he's like fighting off a horde on his own, and he's like, bring it on, man, woohoo! And it's like, okay, I feel you. We're on the same wavelength right now. Like, it's a good feeling, as opposed to like being like, oh no, a stereotype or something like that.
Yeah, and actually, that's a really good segue, because I guess going back to Borderlands, there's actually another character from that series that kind of relates to what we're talking about, and that is Roland. And so in Borderlands 1, he was one of the player characters, and they were, you know, mostly silent protagonists. But, you know, they had like combat lines, like when you got critical hits or ran out of ammo or you were using your special ability. And he was kind of like a more subdued version of Cole. Like, he was more lively. He kind of talked jive. Like, one of his line was critical biatch and stuff like that. But he was, you know, he was a player character, so you didn't really get inside his mind or his personality that much, you know, because he was basically supposed to be you. And then come Borderlands 2, where he's sort of promoted to an NPC. Like, now he's the leader of the resistance, and he plays a much more important role. And of course, he's doing a lot more talking. You could particularly argue that his personality did almost a complete 180. Like, he's way more reserved now. He's more like, he's kind of like, have you ever heard of the trope, the bald black leader guy? Kind of like Nick Fury.
And, I think so.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's a very prominent trope in like a lot of media. And Roland kind of sort of became that. And a lot of like, I heard some criticism that, you know, like, they sort of like sucked the fun out of his personality and just sort of retooled him to fit the story and that sort of thing. And I guess I see their point. Like, I would have liked Roland to, I would have liked to there have been more consistency in his character. But I guess, what is your opinion on that sort of change? Like how he went,
The character?
Yeah, like how he kind of went from more lively to sort of like reserved and awkward as soon as he became a more prominent character. Like,
I guess, how can I put it? I guess it's another way of kind of just simply giving a different kind of life to the character. Rather than subduing him, what you're doing to him is showing how years and years of this war has affected him. So, you know, at first he starts off really lively, but then he kind of, I don't want to say devolves, but he kind of goes down, and you can really see that it's starting to wear on him. He's been fighting for too long. That kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah.
It shows the, I guess, the humanism of it.
And yeah, I can understand that. I mean, I guess that's kind of how I would sort of view it too. I guess for me, it's more or less like one of those things I hadn't really noticed until it was pointed out. I was just happy that a black man was in an important role.
Right.
But
No, you're
I guess that
absolutely
kind
right.
of brings up like how, unfortunately, it seems like you ever see with black characters, and it seems like no matter how we act, no matter how we're depicted, it just seems like we can't really, I don't know, like it feels like people are trying to look for, whenever there's a black character, they're trying to look for the perfect black character. Like this character always acts this way, and if they don't act this way, then
That
they're bad.
right. That's kind of what I was speaking to with Cole specifically, because like I said, it feels awful to say it, like, he's quote unquote stereotypical. Because that's what non-white people, or excuse me, non-black people would say about the character or any character that acts the way Cole did. Has Cole's personality. He's being stereotypical. Whereas, if a black character is not doing that, then for some reason, and I've heard this before, they will kind of label them as like one of the good ones, or like, something like that. It's kind, it's not, it, it doesn't feel good either way. It's like a very lose-lose situation. You don't want to be thought of as quote unquote one of the good ones, but you also don't want to be like a stereotype. It's a very unfortunate kind of middle ground that you have to play
It's a
into when
catch-22.
you're, yeah, right, in the worst possible way. We also asked, no, sorry, someone also answered to the question of some of the amazing black characters that they've seen by answering with Mortal Kombat 11. Jala the Nomad says Mortal Kombat 11 went to some really good places with Jax and his daughter. I've seen little of Jax's daughter simply because I don't play a lot of Mortal Kombat, but from what I've seen, Jackie is a really great representation of black women, especially in video games. The character model, first of all, is incredible. I mean, she's got dreads. It's a very strong looking representation of a character. She's a kickboxer. She very much follows in her father's footsteps, which speaks to, I think, a little bit of a lot of the father-daughter relationships that people speak about in popular media and writing as usual.
Oh, definitely.
It's very nice to see Jackie. Now, that being said, I don't like Mortal Kombat. It's way too gory. So I only really enjoy seeing Jackie like in very neutral kind of screenshots where she's maybe standing just kind of strongly, ready to fight or something like that. Other than that, I don't care to see like her go through any of the fatalities or anything because I'm not a fan. Not a fan.
Though, speaking of Mortal Kombat, I guess, well, are you familiar with one of Jax's endings for the most recent one?
Maybe if you tell me which one, I probably will be.
So there's actually one of his endings where, so one of the main storyline for Mortal Kombat is that, time is out of whack. There's a titan sort of messing with the timelines, and all the fighters, like how you play through all the fighter stories and then you get the true ending. And Jax's ending was that he basically rewrote history so that Africa was never colonized. And
That's right.
from there it
That's right.
grew
I
and
do remember that.
from there it grew into an advanced civilization.
That's right. I do remember that. That is, maybe I need to know the specifics of A, who worked on that particular ending, and B, who worked on the game as a whole. Like, if there's any black people, black developers in the crew, which I'm sure there are. But it feels like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a white guilt.
Oh my God, yes. Like, I completely get
It feels
that.
like, we did something bad. Let's make it right in this video game.
Yeah, 'cause like I guess it's actually kind of a sort of interesting case 'cause Jackie's story ending was that she literally writes herself out of history so that her
Right.
father doesn't die and gets corrupted. And I guess I find it interesting how they had like really opposite. Like, I like Jackie's ending because, you know, it's about her character. It's about what she wants. It's about her sacrificing herself for the people, for the person she loves, for the people she loves. And Jax is, it's like, well, I do sort of appreciate a character like thinking of the air quotes, like, not air quotes, but thinking of the greater good and not themselves. It just seems like. Now, and I preface this by saying I don't know that much about Jax, but it seems like they, it feels like they could have done anything else with Jax, and it would have been better, in my opinion. Like,
Right.
because it's like you said, it just feels like a very sort of white guilt thing. It's like.
It does. I don't get me wrong, like incredible ending, incredible idea. I'd like to be in that timeline. But like it feels very much like you have now kind of erased the productiveness of black people in America, right? Some of us are descended from or very well connected to the people who the man who created the stoplight, the man who performed the first open heart surgery. Some of us are proud of the achievements that we've made in society, in American society. And now you've done something that is pretty cool. I mean, you've kept us on the continent where we came from, most of us anyway. But now what you've done is you've erased the beauty, the black beauty, as it were, in America, in American society.
Yeah, and I think it just feels sort of disingenuous. Like, it feels just like, you know, it feel, I guess, to sort of use a statement I don't really like using, it feels like they're trying to get woke points.
Yeah, woke points. Oh, we'll talk about wokeness in a moment. Oh boy. Actually, yeah. Let's
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
let's no, you're fine. Let's oh boy. We are running out of time. So,
Oh
I do want to get to the two quick stories that I did find that were relevant to today's show. So, let's first start with the UK gaming industry. So, there is a company that reports on the gaming industry census. They are called Yuki, UKIE. I believe it's like UK Interactive Entertainment or something like that. And they've put out a report. A group of about 3,208 people working in different roles in the census, different roles in the gaming community, took the census, and according to the census, of the gaming industry workers in the United Kingdom, about 10% are Black, Asian, or some other ethnicity. Additionally, 70% of people in the industry identify as male, 28% as female, and about 2% are non-binary. Likewise, 21% of people working in the industry identify as LGBTQ plus, and trans people make up about 3% of game workers. Now, I know a lot of these numbers seem a little low, and they are, I mean, considerably. However, they do point out that of the entire country nationally, the census data shows that about 93 to 97% of people in the UK nationally are heterosexual. So having a 21% of people working in the industry as LGBTQ plus, identifying as LGBTQ plus, that's pretty good. That's not a bad statistic overall. Especially having a, th I thought, to be quite honest, that the trans statistic would be a little bit lower, but 3% is pretty good. Especially when I guess it says here about 1% are within the national population. So that, I mean, that's pretty good in the big picture. Likewise, when it comes to people of color in the industry in the UK, it seems pretty low. But if you factor in people who are non UK citizens who are working in the industry, it comes out to about 40%
Oh,
of
wow.
the industry. So it's that's pretty good. I mean, it's not ideal, right? We
Yeah.
10% is still 10%, but it's better than I think it is in America, maybe.
I mean, I would actually like to see the numbers for America, because,
I would too.
yeah, because I guess I always thought of us as having probably more diversity in ethnicity than the UK, but it may not factor in that way.
Yeah. You cannot tell. I mean, you can. Maybe there's a census out there somewhere. I haven't seen one in just yet. And when you search gaming industry census, what you usually get is gambling results, which is not necessarily what I'm looking for. But I thought it was really interesting. Again, it's not the most ideal. We do want to like see these numbers go up. We want to see a little less straight white male and a little more, I don't know, anything else.
Basically. And I guess it's like, and I guess sort of compounding sort of back to depictions, like I think as more people, get into the industry, we have more diversity amongst people who work in the industry, we'll see sort of like at least more varied depictions. I don't want to say necessarily better, but more varied.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Less black people in violent video games and more like what's that game called? Like not The Last of Us. It's like the episodic one with the psychic
Oh,
powers.
The Walking Dead.
No, that not that one.
Oh, man.
The other episodic one with the psychic powers. Not Last of Us, not
Oh,
This
man.
Is Us, but it'll come to me, or you'll yell at me, whichever. Just yell at me, it's fine. I yelling at me is engagement, so as long as you yell at me on Twitter, it's fine. But I would like to see, Stardew Valley, black person, or like Harvest Moon, but with a black person,
Yeah, because it's like
stuff like that.
there's only like one black or two black people if you with Maru and Demetrius in the whole game of Stardew Valley.
Right. We want to see more. Bring out the black people. We want to see them. We want to see the beauty. Okay. So that was a that's a really interesting story there with the UK census. That being said, I don't want to call it interesting, but it is a bit interesting. Bosky Studios, if you remember, was once responsible for two games with a lot of promise, Lawbreakers and Radical Heights. Unfortunately, both games failed for many reasons, including that there were more popular versions of the genres these two games sought to enter into, PUBG and Overwatch being the top two. However, Cliff Bleszinski seems to throw another factor into the ring, his own political beliefs. In an Instagram post, the co-founder of BossKey said that he pushed his own beliefs in a world that was increasingly divided, saying, quote, "Instead of the story being this game looks neat, it became this is the game with the woke bro trying to push his hacky politics on us with gender-neutral bathrooms." As Andy Chalk from PC Gamer pointed out, Lawbreakers has a fairly diverse cast of black, white, and Asian looking presenting characters, so it seems a little confusing that he would cite this as one of the failures for the game. In addition to the gender-neutral bathrooms comment, he also went on to say, instead of, quote, instead of these characters seem fun, it was this is the studio with the CEO who refuses to make his female character sexier. Instead of, quote, who am I going to choose, it became white dude shoehorns diversity in his game and then smells his own smug farts in interviews, instead of letting the product speak for itself. Now, again, is it a negative to have? He seems to frame this all as like one of the negatives of his game. The characters are not sexy. The characters are too diverse. Why is that a negative? Why, what, like, I don't think that brought down your game. For what it's worth, Lawbreakers had a really decent score overall. People kind of enjoyed it and wanted to see where it went. However, it did end up tanking, partly because it was pay to play at one point and then it went free to play. Like, it couldn't decide what it was. Mm-hmm. I don't think it had anything to do with the diversity of the cast.
I certainly don't either. Like, I think while it's important to sort of address the issues that the issue with people like who believe diversity is shoehorned in, or it's actually kind of, I've heard a quote, some people believe that there are only two races in games, white and political. And I think it's sort of like important that we still sort of like say, hey, these people still exist and are still sort of like gaining attention. But I do wonder, like, how much of it is a silent majority sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this case, now granted, I know very little about Lawbreakers, but it does seem like it was poor timing. Because like you said, PUBG and Overwatch were huge in the scene, and it just kind of like got swept under the rug.
Right. I mean, and to that point though, without first noting the factors like marketing, and he does come back later, by the way, after this story kind of ran by multiple other outlets aside from PC Gamer's article, Blazinski did update the post to emphasize that it was the political leanings, as it were, quote unquote, were just one factor of the failure, not the factor. He says, quote, marketing timing being on PlayStation over Xbox and more were other factors. Then he calls it stupid clickbait headlines. I hope you got the hits you wanted. It seems to me like, first of all, if you're not leading with, here are what I did wrong, the marketing, the timing, etc., etc., then you're using race, gender, sexuality, and all of that as a scapegoat to say, here's why my thing went wrong. There weren't enough white people in it. Like, it doesn't seem genuine to start a post with the white audience didn't like what I was putting out, and therefore it failed. The white male audience didn't like what I was putting out, and therefore it failed.
Because I guess it's kind of funny because I always find it interesting that usually that's sort of like the unfortunate thing with representation in video games. Like, a lot of people seem to sort of correlate like diversity with quality. Like, yes, I would think that a game with more diversity is better than a game with less, but I also think that a lot of people seem to think that it's sort of inherently linked. Like, if something goes bad or performs bad, one of the first things people blame is the diversity. Like, sort of like the, like, oh, the female Ghostbusters failed because the Ghostbusters were female. Like, there's no doubt that there were people who were trashing the reputation of this movie were doing it because the Ghostbusters were female. But sometimes, like, these games and the media in general just sort of suffers from, like, bad writing or poor planning or poor marketing, mm-hmm. and but people still want to tie it back to the diversity.
Right. I don't like it, Cliff. You're making me upset, man. For what it's worth, I really enjoyed Lawbreakers, and I also really enjoyed Radical Heights. Radical Heights, in particular, was this really nice, like, 80s-styled battle royale, so there was a lot of, like, weird little game shows that would happen during the game show that was the battle royale. So it had a lot, it had, both games, I think, had so much potential to be something great, mm-hmm. and to blame the closing of Bosky Studios and the failure of Lawbreakers, it seemingly at least, on this one sole factor that you were allowing your quote-unquote politics to take precedence, I think is lazy and uninformed.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
And that's my 3 cents on it. Not 2 cents, 3 cents. Okay, we are running out of time, so we're gonna move toward the end of the show. And to do so, we always ask that you give our listeners a recommendations. What game or games should they be on the lookout for? Please let us know.
I think that people should look at, be on the lookout for Grim Dawn. I think it's a wonderful fantasy ARPG with a very interesting post-apocalyptic sort of steampunk setting and a class system where you sort of like combine two base classes into one. And while I actually prefer Diablo 3's gameplay, like many people call it a good successor to Diablo 2. And I think it's a great alternative if you find Path of Exile too grindy and its talent tree too big. While it's majorly lacking black characters and some diversity, I'm going to remain optimistic in that they'll include mm-hmm. more ethnicities in their next expansions.
Very interesting. I don't super like ARPGs, but this one sounds cool. Grim Dawn. Mm-hmm. Grim Dawn. All right. I'll be looking out for Grim Dawn. I'm going to quickly recommend, I recommended it, I think, either last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, Mafia 3. I'm going to be doing a little bit of a series on it this month, kind of me talking to you, yelling, maybe, about Mafia 3, because there's something interesting about it, and it actually goes a bit hand-in-hand in what you were talking about earlier, about growing up black in the South in the 60s. Well, a lot of Mafia 3 takes place during the 60s as a black male in Louisiana, no less. So there's some real racism down there. And it's both a very compelling, interesting way to experience this kind of like GTA clone, because it's got all the, you know, the driving and all the mission-based system, tons and tons of violence, but it's also the character you play as is so complex and so interesting that it takes the kind of what we usually know these games to be, like GTA, and takes all the kind of comedy away from it, really. It's not a funny game at all. It's very serious. It takes itself seriously. And so much so to the point where, and I'll mention this, well, I don't want to give it away. I don't want to spoiler it. But it almost reminds you of, if you're a black person playing it, it reminds you in that moment while you're playing the game that you are black. And it's jarring, but it's eye-opening in the same way. And it's weird to say that, but it brings in the reality very well. So You'll hear more about it if you listen to the bonus episodes coming out later this month. But go play Mafia 3. It's a very compelling story.
I agree, because from the Let's Play I saw of it, it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, it was very good. Mafia 1 and 2 suck. No, sorry, Mafia 1 sucks. Mafia 2's okay. Mafia 3 is a vast improvement and a great story. Great, really great story. On that note, to finally finish off this episode, please let us know where we can find you on the internet and if you have anything else to plug.
Like earlier, like I said, I don't have anything out immediately, but if you want to know where I am, and if you want to be, if you're interested in anything I might put out later, you can find me on Twitter at kaiju underscore cat, all lowercase, and on YouTube as kaiju cat. And maybe I'll branch out on Twitch eventually, but probably under the same name.
Very good. Very good. Very good. All right. As always, you can find me at KamiJace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown on its own Twitter page at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit wkcooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Check out our new Instagram page. It's mostly pictures of me, but also there's videos of some clips from the show. Yeah, check that out. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And be sure to support your favorite charities and support the show. You can also donate to the show if you wish. There is a link in the description as well. Plus, by the way, next week's episode is going to be live on Twitch. So if you want to check out that episode live on Twitch, go to twitch.tv/KamiJaceGaming. All right, that's all for the weekly cooldown. I'm KamiJace.
And I'm Kaiju Cat.
And we'll see you next week. Thank you, everyone.